Hi, my name is Danielle, and you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. On this podcast, we discuss subjects that might be creepy to some, and sometimes even frightening. Some of our episodes will deal with serious subject matter, while others will be more lighthearted. Please keep in mind that I am not an expert on any of the topics I cover, just an interested party, and as always, listener discretion is advised. Hi everyone, and welcome back. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Nadine.
And you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. I hope everyone has gotten through the holidays safe and sound and is back to normal. I enjoy the holidays myself, but I always feel like you get to that nebulous period where you're not sure what day of the week it is. Even when you're working, it's just confusing because you get days off. So I like getting into the structure again once they're over.
Yeah, I agree. And you just start like drinking earlier and earlier because you don't know what time of day it is. Yeah, it's nice to get back into the routine.
It's when you're eating chocolate for breakfast and everything gets confusing. We're going to be covering a case that's local to us this week. Actually, Nadine, you're the one who mentioned this one to me a few months back. I've been looking at it off and on since. We're going to be talking about the disappearance of Marty Legere.
Oh, yeah.
Marty Legere headed out for a bike ride on May 29th, 2014, in an area of Nova Scotia called Spider Lake. He was 30 years old and out for a ride on his new black Santa Cruz Heckler bike. So I've never been to that area, but you have, right?
Many, many times. I would almost say I know that area quite well. The front part of it. There's like kind of like a front country, if you want, like the more known trails, and then there's some like real back country because I go running, so I wouldn't go as far as the bikers, but I know it well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My understanding of it is it's that it's close to a residential area, but once you get on the trail, like one side would be more residential, but the other side is just wooded.
Yeah, you actually park on like a cul-de-sac at the end of a street, like a residential street. And I say residential, it's not like a suburban area. Like you're a little bit outside the city, but it's actually like a higher end sort of subdivision. So like large yards and fewer homes, but definitely
There's houses around
there.
Not the middle of nowhere.
In fact, it's there's a bit of an issue. A lot of the people who live around there don't like that
people are
parking there. And then you get into fairly dense forest quite quickly and for a long time. I could see it being very easy to get lost in there.
Okay. And I find like there's a lot of places in Canada where you get that, where you don't feel like you're far in the forest just because you're so close to homes or a highway or a major thoroughfare. But if you do get turned around a little bit and are walking in the wrong direction, you could walk forever.
And it's an area that the trails aren't very well marked. I know them because I started going with like a running group and that's how I learned them. But once you start getting further in, you can easily get turned around, and there's mix of ATV trails, biking trails, single track trails. Like it you can get very confused easily.
According to strangeoutdoors.com, Marty went for a bike ride. I think it was around 1 p.m. and he was due back home at 4 that evening, but he never showed up. His family called the police at 8:40 p.m. that evening. His vehicle was quickly located at Spider Lake near the trailhead, so I'm assuming that cul-de-sac you were talking about, but there was no sign of Marty. There was a map of the area left in his car, and according to an Outside Online article by John Billman, it's reported that the last known sighting of Marty would have been when he was parking the car, when he arrived at the trailhead. One of the local mountain bikers who was familiar with the Spider Lake trails came out to aid in the search. In an interview on strangeoutdoors.com, he says that most of the trails out there are single track, so that means that they're only one bike wide. You can't sort of cross one another. But he also says that there's a lot of little trails that you can kind of branch off the main trail, and it's pretty easy to get lost.
And I'll just add, there aren't a ton of like huge landmarks. Like there's actually one like lake back there, but other than that, like it's not like another area that we go to a lot, to like Long Lake, that where there's a couple little lakes, or you know, like okay, I gotta keep the water on my ride, or I gotta keep my water, like it's forest for a lot of it.
I do find when I go hiking, there's a lot of places around here that have that, where you've got your main trail, but there's little like game tracks off the side, or just people who decided to bushwhack, or there's a lookout if you keep going. And it's really easy to wander off the trail onto one of those smaller trails without realizing you've done it. Like, I get myself turned around all the time because of that.
Yeah, same.
Apparently the riding conditions in the area include a lot of rocky and uneven terrain, which a lot of mountain bikers are actually looking for, but it could be dangerous if you had a fall by yourself. Marty would have been familiar with this type of terrain, but apparently he'd only been out in that area once before. I don't think he was new to mountain biking, but his twin brother, Marcel, mentions in a few articles that Marty was a very conservative mountain biker. He wouldn't have taken any undue risks. The search for Marty was actually one of the biggest in Canadian history.
Wow, I didn't realize that. I knew it was very thorough.
Yeah, it really wasn't one of those situations where they're like, oh, he'll turn up. They got into action very quickly. They covered 60 square miles, which apparently is pretty much that whole forested area, and it involved over 500 people when you count volunteers and the trained searchers. They had dogs, helicopters, and even the military came out and participated in the search for Marty. Were you living here at the time?
Yeah, I was. And I remember the running group, the trail running group that I went with, a lot of the people, especially the group leaders, went out and they were calling for people to say, like, if you feel comfortable, if you feel like you know the trails, if you want to come volunteer, donate money, coffee, what have you. There was a large group of us that had brought out sandwiches and coffee to the group. Unfortunately, circumstance didn't allow us to go in and search, but we brought like food and coffee to the people out there. And they were a huge help, the trail runners and the local bike mountain bikers, because obviously they know those trails really, really well.
Yeah, and that's what I was reading, that the terrain was so rough and dense that, I mean, they were searching as thoroughly as they could, but in some areas it was so bad that some of the searchers actually got injured. And we're talking about like people in the military that are trained for this, and they had a really hard time navigating that terrain.
Yeah. I remember it being still like cold though. Like, I mean, end of May around here, you can still be chilly and damp.
Sometimes almost winter still.
Yeah, and the bugs were terrible. I remember it being like chilly. Like, I remember it being cold like by the evening and still getting dark early enough. Yeah. And so that has a play for sure. And just being May, I mean, it would be muddy and wet, and man, it would have been tough.
But even with all those efforts, they found no sign of Marty. They didn't find his bike. And other than his car, there was no clue that he'd been there or that anything had even happened. I didn't see it mentioned outright that they questioned other people on the trail that day. I assume they did, and that the reason it's not mentioned is there was nothing relevant to say, that no one saw anything.
Nothing. Like, from what I understand, like there was nothing suspicious, there was nothing unusual. Like, I think I'm just going by memory, but like, I feel like a couple people other ran into him just as he was coming in, and like they you know, it tends to be a pretty friendly group of people, and people are just like, hey, like, you know, things seemed fine, but they didn't find anything. Like, not a helmet, not like, I don't think they found
anything. I mean, under normal circumstances, if you're someone who spends time in the woods, you wouldn't necessarily leave anything, right? Like, the whole idea is you take everything back that you brought in.
But so, just the thought of, like, if he had gotten in an accident or hurt himself and for some reason couldn't get back on his bike, like, you would have found his bike, you would have found something.
Well, him.
Him, a body.
Like, if you fell off your bike and hurt yourself, like, you'll be right there.
Right.
So that, I think, is something that confused a lot of people as to what happened to this man. The search was called off on June 3rd, 2014. No further leads were found, and everything went quiet for a few years. In October of 2016, human remains were discovered by a hunter in the Spider Lake area. The RCMP were called in, and many people thought that they had discovered Marty's remains. These remains were found just 1 kilometer from the end of Spider Lake Road, which would have been part of the search grid. But the remains turned out to be those of Cordell Ware, a 50-year-old man that had last been seen leaving his home in Dartmouth in 2013. He had been missing ever since. According to a 2013 CBC article, Cordell had left his home around 8 a.m. on November 24th, 2013. He didn't have his cell phone, money, or his ID. His family had said that he was upset when he left, though they don't really say what was going on. But foul play was never suspected in his disappearance. And once his remains were identified, the police reiterated that foul play was not suspected. There isn't much else out there about Cordell Ware's disappearance, so once they identified the remains, everything kind of went quiet. So I think we're all smart enough to figure out what might have happened there.
I remember when that news broke that they had found remains, my first thought was, oh my God, it's Marty. And then I remember them saying like it was, you know, really soon into the trail. And then like my head, I was like, what? I don't understand. How is that possible? Like they searched so thoroughly. And that would have been like where not just searched once, like it would have been an area that you would have covered a lot because you would have been going in and out and in and out and in and out. And, but I did think like, oh my God, the family's finally going to get closure. And then I heard it was, I mean, I'm happy that another family, someone who disappeared, his family got closure. But my first thought was Marty as well.
Yeah, so one family got answers about what happened to their missing loved one, but Marty's family still didn't. The fact that, like you say, that his body was discovered just a kilometer from Spider Lake Road would have been within that search grid, but it just shows how dense and rugged the terrain is. So if they cleared, so everything usually when you're doing a search gets gridded off and you have like a quadrant of the grid to search. So once you've searched it, that's crossed off, so you wouldn't necessarily retrace your steps. But the other thing is, if things are buried in the undergrowth a little bit, unless you almost step right on it, like you're looking around as you're walking through, but if something was in the undergrowth right beside you, you might very well walk right by it and never see it.
So just to be clear, so did Cordell disappear after Marty or before Marty? So his remains would have been there, but it would have been remains.
Correct.
Which
it would have been less than a year later.
Okay, so, but depending if
elements, wildlife, elements, I don't know exactly what it would have been there, but right. It would have been from November to end of May.
Think dogs would have picked up on it. But again, if it had been there for a certain amount of time, it could just be blending in with the environment.
Exactly.
But I think it's a different thing to be looking for a live adult male and a bike. Or even if he was not alive, but recently deceased, I think that would be a little bit harder to miss. I mean, the fact that his bike was black didn't help because it wouldn't have been easy to see. I don't remember what he was wearing. I'm sure they had...
I didn't see anything. I know it was just a t-shirt. Like, he wasn't dressed warmly by any means, but it doesn't give a description of his clothing that I found. And the other thing to think about is that what kind of dogs did they have out there, right? Because dogs aren't usually trained to both find a living person and human remains. And like 3 days into the search, they more than likely didn't have cadaver dogs out there. I mean, I'm not an expert here, but logically, that's kind of how I would think about it. It probably wasn't a cadaver dog, so probably he wasn't trained to alert on those things.
Yeah, they were probably looking for a live scent.
And who knows if a dog was in every single search quadrant either. There might be some specific areas that they were looking more closely with the dogs, or that's searching more closely with the dogs. So it's also believed that despite the massive search effort that happened, Marty might still be out there. It's something that they point out in a 2014 CBC news clip that, again, the underbrush is so dense that you could walk right past something and never know it was there. But at the same time, that leads you to wonder, like, if the search happened pretty much right away after he went missing. So it's not like he would be beneath that underbrush in his bike as well. Like, you would think something would be more obvious if he was in that area.
I know. And I know there were a lot of theories thrown out of him disappearing. You might get into that. But
and that's where we're going next.
Yeah, like possibly did he choose to disappear? If I recall, was he newly engaged?
I did see somewhere that he was supposed to get married soon, but it wasn't a news article. It was just someone's comment. So I really don't know how accurate that is.
I remember there were lots of things going. So he's from the same town as I am. And so we had a lot of friends in common on Facebook, and lots of people were saying different things. I know quite a few people who know him. And again, how well do you ever know a person? But everyone was just like, no, like he was happy. Like that seemed to be floated as an idea from people who didn't know him. But everyone that did know him, including his twin brother, was like, we really don't think that that's what happened.
And honestly, how often does that happen? It's not impossible, but it's very difficult to disappear nowadays. Yeah. Most of us would not have the skill to do so.
And to not leave a digital print of some sort, exactly. Like with debit cards or visas or online banking or cell phone pings. And that's another question, actually. Did he have his cell phone on him?
Didn't find any information about that. I would assume he didn't.
Because they can ping cell phones quite... Yeah. Easily now.
Yeah, I would assume he didn't, because they don't talk about that at all. And in terms of, like, it's not even mentioned really anywhere that people think that he just walked off and, like, left his life. I don't think it's a theory that has much credence.
No, I don't think so either.
In strangeoutdoors.com, there's a few theories that are put forward. I don't want to get into, like, really wild speculation, because there's some of that out there too. But one thing that they mentioned, that he might have been hit by a car. So... apparently one of the trails ends on a logging road, and it's not unusual for trucks and ATVs to be sort of zipping around that area. And it's mostly people just kind of having fun. It's not an actual like road. And some of them drive around that area under the influence. So my understanding is the trail like abruptly comes out into this area. So they were thinking that maybe if he was hit by a vehicle and someone panicked and then took the bike and the body and disposed of it, would explain why no one can find him. It's a possibility.
Yeah, there are a lot of... I've never seen vehicles up there. I've seen lots of ATVs. Actually, like one of the main thoroughfares is an ATV trail, and then you kind of get off of that for a bunch of little trails. I know exactly the area you're talking about. I've never seen other vehicles up there. I never thought of that, but I guess it would be obviously the most sinister thought, but it is absolutely a possibility.
The other possibility is a sort of a more obvious one, that he got hurt and succumbed to the elements. His brother actually thinks that he may have gone off trail, like off the main trail, and gotten lost. And if he found any kind of road thinking that it would get him back to the main area, he may have followed that. Now, when you think of it, you can cover a lot of distance on a bike. So the grid that you would search on foot versus what you would search on a bike needs to be very different. So if he followed a road thinking it would bring him back to, you know, civilization, he may have been too far out by the time he realized that he wouldn't be able to get back. Temperatures still drop quite a bit at night, even at the end of May around here, and only wearing a t-shirt if you got weak, dehydrated. You know, he could have crawled into a little space somewhere to get warm, to spend the night, and succumb to the elements.
Yeah, the area, it's kind of the way it's gridded, if you will. It's kind of interesting. You kind of have Waverly Road on one side of it, and then the other side of that is Shuby Park. And then the other sort of one side of that is the highway. So you almost, and it's kind of triangular, like it's not really square. So it would be like unbelievably bad luck for him to go the one direction that brought him deeper into the woods versus hitting the highway eventually. And I know they even searched across the highway. Yeah. They even went as far as going across the highway and across Waverly Road into Shuby Park, because there are a couple trails that you do, like you can cross the road and then go back into the park. But like they searched it thoroughly. You'd think if he was on like a logging road or something that someone would have spotted something at some point. But I guess if people are driving by fast, you wouldn't necessarily see it. Like probably not a ton of people walk there.
It might be roads that are no longer used at all as well.
That's true. I mean, there are a lot of ATVs in there, but if he pulled his bike off the trail and it got put under the bush, yeah.
And I think the whole point that people are trying to make when they're thinking about the fact that he got lost over he just fell off his bike and got hurt is, again, like, if he fell off his bike and got hurt, they would have found him. He would have been on one of the trails that they searched, so he would have been much more easily found and not, like, in the middle of nowhere. So that's why I think for a lot of people that theory that he got lost makes more sense.
It does. And that even if they didn't find him in that first initial 3-4 day search, that someone would have found him by now. Right. Those are really popular mountain biking trails. So if it was somewhere on or very near a trail, someone would have found something by now.
His twin brother, Marcel, is interviewed in some of these articles. In the Outdoor Online article, Marcel talks about how hard it is to miss his brother every day, but also basically to see him every time he looks in a mirror because they're twins. They look alike. It's just this like spitting image every time you look, and feeling like he's a constant reminder to friends and family that Marty has been missing. I wrote this part down and I kind of deliberated back and forth whether or not to put it in, but I know none of us want to come across remains when we're outside exploring, having fun. But doing this podcast has really opened my eyes to how important it is to contact someone if you see anything out of the ordinary in the woods. It might be nothing. You might contact law enforcement and they might say, yeah, it's not important, it doesn't matter, someone's already told us about that, which is fine. But I do think if you see anything that just kind of makes you go, what's that doing there? Maybe don't look at it yourself, but maybe contact someone to go check it out, because I feel like we've covered a lot of cases where people, you know, you've searched an area and you're like almost certain that someone's lost in there, but you just can't find them. So I don't know if closure is a real thing for families, but I think getting answers is very important in one shape or form. So I just think for those of us who like to spend time outdoors, it's really important if you see something out of the ordinary, just contact law enforcement and they'll decide whether or not it's worth checking out.
I have that thought all the time. I spend a lot of time in the woods, a lot of time by myself. And as being a bit of a true crime junkie, I do listen to a lot of different podcasts and read a lot of stories. And I think about it all the time. And it utterly terrifies me, the thought of coming across something. I'll be totally honest. I have not gone to Spider Lake by myself since Marty has disappeared. Yeah. And that they also found Cordell's remains. It just really... I just don't want to be that person, like, by myself. I think it would really spook me. And so I go I've gone with other people. But I think it all the time. It's really interesting. Just a couple of weeks ago, I came across a pair of sneakers in the woods. And I thought that was so weird. I was like, why would you leave without your shoes? Who would forget their shoes? I was like, maybe someone was camping. Maybe they were hurting their feet and they put on flip-flops. But I thought it was weird. And so I called the like non-emergency number, and exactly, I was like, you know what? Maybe they think I'm bananas and I'm a weird person, and maybe they did nothing about it, but it's off my conscious. And I like, but I was like, I just kept thinking about it. I was finishing my run and I got in the car and I was like, nope, weird. This, I don't care. This is just weird. I have to just tell someone else. And I did.
And that's another thing I wanted to point out. Obviously, if it's something like a pair of shoes, or probably non-emergency telephone yes. line is the best way to go. Obviously, you don't, like, it's not urgent.
Yeah, there's no 911. I don't need to use up emergency
exactly.
yeah, time.
But at the same time, maybe there is something that happened in that area that you're not aware of and the police are. And, you know, you hear some cases where, oh, someone came across a book bag in the woods or this in the woods or somewhere strange. And you're like, I don't know if I would have called anyone about that.
But now, having listened to so many like different podcasts and read so many stories, like, cases have been solved with that, or at least given an indication of, like, you know, they found someone's ID or something very identifying in that backpack, and it's 500 kilometers from where that person disappeared from. Like, that then it at least indicates to authorities, like, that person was here at some mm-hmm. point, or someone brought that. But like, it can be trivial, but it could be also
something. When he disappeared in 2014, Marty was 30 years old, which would make him 36, going on 37 today. He was about 5'10". He had a beard and reddish hair. And he was riding a black Santa Cruz Heckler bike. I'll post a picture of that type of bike because I'm not a mountain biker, wasn't familiar with it, but I'll put a picture up there so that people can know what kind of bike that is. If you have any information about this case, please contact your local police detachment. We're going to wind down tonight with a moment of kindness, as we always do. Did you have anything to share?
My children, obviously, like every child under the age of 4, love to watch the garbage truck go by and get really excited. So when we hear it and we're still home in the morning, the kids love to go to the window.
It's just funny because I had a garbage truck one last week.
Oh, I think that's what reminded me too. Our neighbor, she's really friendly and kind to everyone in her neighborhood, but she went out and brought them gifts. And each, like, she had like hot Tim Hortons coffee waiting for them. And then her husband helped.
She had hot Tim Hortons coffee
for the garbage Sorry, oh. The garbage truck guys. We were watching this, so that's why our side happened.
Okay.
So she came out and brought them gifts for the garbage truck guys and coffee. And then her and her husband helped them pick up the garbage all along our cul-de-sac as like a thank you for what you did and like do for us. And I was like, that's really kind. That's like she was waiting for them and knowing they were coming. And then to like also help them like, you know, do their job for our route. I just thought that was really kind of her.
Yeah, the coffee and the gifts. I never even would have thought of that, but that those people help you as much as anyone else. So yeah. Definitely deserve recognition. I also had a moment of kindness sent in by, I think her name, she goes by Dana on Instagram, and she listens all the way from Qatar, which I just learned today was not pronounced Qatar.
Oh, I would have said Qatar as well.
I had to look it up because I was not 100% sure.
No.
Apparently, it's closer to Qatar than it is Qatar. I'm probably not saying it the right
way. Is it just because we're like anglicizing it, though? Do you know what I mean?
No,
like,
the correct pronunciation is closer to Qatar than it is Qatar.
Oh.
Yeah.
I had a roommate who was from what I say Qatar, and I feel like he used to say Qatar. Okay. Maybe he was just too polite to correct me.
Again, probably I'm not saying it the correct way either way, but I actually listened to a little clip and yeah, it sounded close. And then I read something that said it sounds closer to Qatar than Qatar. So she shared a story that where she works is a really tall tower, like a really tall building. And she was in her underground parking lot at her building and noticed there was a cat down there. And she was really concerned because it's several stories underground, so she thought, like, how will this cat get back out?
And it's not a residential building, so the cat doesn't live in the building.
No, it's a work tower. Okay. So apparently people were actually bringing it food, and it was there for a few days. She thought that the cat should be brought outside so it could go back to wherever. Like, it might be an outdoor cat, a cat that's allowed to roam, but just got stuck in the building. But she couldn't take the cat out because she has allergies, so she couldn't actually pick it up. But she talked to the security guard in her building and he was actually able to rescue the cat. So I thought that was a really nice story. I mean, any story where an animal is rescued is a nice one.
That is sweet. That's thoughtful. She went out of her way. She could have just ignored the cat and gone on with her day.
For sure. Or just like feeding it is very nice, but you're not actually helping it.
Yeah,
right?
Like that's not sustainable long term.
Yeah, exactly.
Good job, Dana.
As always, thanks to everyone who's been listening. If you could take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, that would be great. And thank you so much to the people who've done so already. You can find us on Instagram at Crime and Mystery Canada, and we have a Facebook group by the same name. You can also reach us at crimeandmysterycanada@gmail.com. Stay safe out there and have a good night.
Have a good night.